Yeah.
Okay, so let's cast this pod.
Are we actually recording?
I have been for a while.
All of that on tape.
I was about to say on tape.
Just rewind it. Yeah. Stick a pen in it and give it a spin.
Have you seen that? Those memes where it's a cassette tape and a pen. And like kids today will never know what the relationship between these two things. And that's no bad thing because that relationship used to make me so sad.
Terrible.
Because it would never go back in well, ever.
No, and if it's come out, it's gone all creased and weird. And do it, and then you'd have to really carefully.
Yeah.
You'd have to do that really slowly.
Yeah. Kids today will never know.
Oh, man. I'm glad they don't know.
Exactly. It's like, I'm fine with that.
Oh.
Right, should we do this? Let's do this.
Let's cast this pod.
Let's cast this pod. Hi, and welcome to If This Film Taught Us Anything, a fortnightly podcast by her, Lorraine Wheatcroft,
and her, Xenia McIntosh,
where we talk about films, what we learn from films, and discuss the many, many questions that pop up along the way.
And we'll play some ridiculous games, get sidetracked, and by the way, there will be spoilers.
So if you haven't seen what we're talking about, come back when you have.
Just come back when you have. Come back later. Hello and welcome to If This Film Taught Us Anything. This week we are talking about the new Steve McQueen heist thriller, Widows, with Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Liam Neeson, Brian Tyree Henry, Colin Farrell, everybody who's ever been in Hollywood ever. It's literally got the best cast of any film that's ever been released.
And it's brilliant.
If I'm honest, and it is absolutely brilliant.
We loved it.
Loved it.
That's like, we will say that right off the bat, that we
so
loved it.
So hard. Probably top how many film of the year. Definitely one of my top. It's in my top three.
Okay. It might have gone straight into my number one spot because I still like it now. We saw it a few days ago and I still like it. And there have been other things that we've seen that we liked in the moment, but then actually afterwards, it's fine, but it hasn't stayed with me. But I have not stopped thinking or talking about this since we saw it.
I have talked about it and thought about it constantly. But if this film has taught me anything, it's that I have no idea what year we're in. Because when was Ragnarok and Black Panther?
That was last year. No, they weren't.
They were this year. Infinity War, Black Panther was this year.
Ant-Man and the Wasp was this year.
Yeah, that was. But was Ragnarok this year as well?
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
So, yeah, so my top films are basically Widows, Hereditary and Black Panther and Ragnarok.
So mine are probably Black Panther. My top films of the year are probably Black Panther, this, Black Klansman.
This is not Black Klansman.
And John Wick.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's not out this year, but I saw it for the first time this year.
That is one of my favourite films of any year.
But you don't get to claim it for this year because you've seen it before.
Really,
whereas I literally watched it last weekend. So,
yeah, actually, if I was doing the top five, I don't think Black Panther would be in my top five.
For the year?
I think it would probably be like six or seven.
Okay.
This is, definitely shot straight into top films.
Unit number one.
Like a bullet.
Yeah.
Or something.
Something like that. So, if this film taught me anything,
yes,
it taught me that I love a beginning that gives you whiplash.
Oh, and it really does.
This beginning was like, hold on to the seat of your pants. Oh, shit, Beryl's made an appearance really early. like, it was like, hold on, buckle up. This is like white knuckle. This is going to move fast. And the first 5 minutes were relentless. And I loved it.
But it doesn't, actually, it starts on a couple in bed scene, isn't it?
True, actually,
actually, it doesn't start fast.
No.
It starts a bit like, because I'm a bit anti, I'm a bit of an 11-year-old boy. I don't like kissing in films. I don't like romance. I don't like, and it literally opened with couple in bed, Big kissing.
And we went to see this with my mum.
Yeah.
And my mum is a wonderful woman in many ways, but my mum has some interesting views.
That's true.
Mm. And my mum apparently is also an 11-year-old boy because she really couldn't cope with the kissing, the up-close kissing as the first scene. But that was the whole point of it, wasn't it? Was to show.
Yeah.
Which brings us on to a later learning point. Yeah, but...
and I don't think my problem with it is that problem.
No.
But yeah, I don't...
Oh, no, I think her problem with it was the same as your problem, which was lot of kissing and a lot of tongue.
Yeah, and then...
Really big.
But the point is, it goes from being super romantic and obviously, you know, very sort of close couple. Then to, like...
Crash, bang, exploded graphics. Oh my god, running. Yeah,
it wasn't bombology, it was exploded graphics.
Yes. And there was enough in the first 5 minutes of this film, I swear to god, to fill a whole other film. You could have easily made a whole film just out of that 5 minutes. And I loved it. I loved that I was like knocked back into my chair.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like a 4D film, like if wind had been blowing at
it
me.
It was just one, like, oh, after another.
Yeah.
Wow, it was just one, oh, after another.
And I loved that. So, yeah, if this film taught me anything, it taught me that I love her.
You like going on that roller coaster.
I do like that roller coaster, yeah.
If this film taught me anything, it was how to make a film. I realised, I mean, as we know, I've only just realised acting exists.
Yeah.
In this past few
and
months.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. But I realised how much is down to actually, like, directing.
Yeah.
And cinematography.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, you've put this together. People have sat down and put this together. Not in a, it was really obvious that this was made and put together.
No.
But there were some bits of it. And I know it's probably, it's because we're looking at films harder than we have done in the past because we're doing this stupidity.
And this podcast has slightly changed the way I watch films.
Definitely.
And I still don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm enjoying it at the moment, so we'll just lean in.
It's not making me like be too, I'm not being stupidly critical.
No, but I'm more aware as I'm watching things.
So yeah, there was, the cinematography is really good in this. It's lovely.
In different ways as well.
Very different ways. And in a, more in less in a sort of, oh, isn't this pretty, than some other films are.
Yeah.
In a, like, let's make a point way. And there's one scene you particularly like. The body is stunning.
I really loved, there is a shot where, so it's a scene where Colin Farrell is in the less affluent part of the town. Let's generously call it the less affluent part of the town. He gets back into his car and the car starts to drive.
Yeah.
And the camera is mounted on the bonnet. And you can't see Colin Farrell and you can't see the people that he's having a conversation with.
Yeah,
and their
out.
Conversation is actually quite muffled. Like, you can make out what they're saying, but that's not the point. And it's a terrible conversation about underhand dealings and all sorts. But as the car drives, you see the background and you see the change in the neighbourhood. And I just thought it was so wonderful the way the camera, without... shouting about it, without hollering, without being like, hey, these are poor people and now these are rich people, just completely made that point through the cinematography as you saw the neighbourhood around the car change.
Sweeps really slowly across the front of the car. And it's not even like it's a long drive.
No, that's kind of the point, isn't
it? It's just like they've got all this in. And yeah, obviously it is the point that he literally lives down the road. It's in the area.
Yeah, yeah.
And but it is like on the edge of, you know, the bad part of town. And it is, you could throw a rock. But it is done, and it's not actually even, it's probably not even a minute long, but it's so good.
And so then clever. The other thing with the cinematography was the close-up shots.
There were a lot,
so many, and it made it so visceral. Like, it just felt uncomfortably close to the action at points. Like, characters got really close to each other, which goes back to the thing you're saying about direction. Like, they were directed to be that close to each other.
That's the obviously, Steve McQueen, obviously, I mean, he's not done a hell of a lot of films, and he has arrived being really, really good at them. I've only seen one other of his films, and it's not my sort of thing. I saw Shame, And I do not watch grown-up films. I'm, you know, hand on heart, I know this. I liked that this was a grown-up film.
Right.
Because normally when we see a heist film, it's Ocean's 8.
Yeah.
Or that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay.
This was a grown-up heist film. This is like if Ocean's 8 was well, was
a grown-up.
Widows.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. This was a grown-up. It's, yeah, nice.
It, and so the other sort of all of the others of his films, even though I know you probably should see them because of the subject matter, whatever, they're not the things I would sit down and watch.
No, and I've tried to. Yeah. No, that's a lie. I have tried to want to.
Yeah,
is the truth. Like I have tried to want to watch 12 Years a Slave, and I have never watched 12 Years a Slave because when I'm sitting down to watch a film, I'm wanting an evening's entertainment, and I don't want that.
Like we said, I'll read serious. Mm-hmm. I'm happy reading, learning. Yeah. But my films tend to actually be a lot less educational.
Yeah. And this... So I didn't quite know what to expect from him with this.
Yeah, and I was wary.
Yeah.
I was really wary.
And I went anyway because Viola Davis, Cynthia Erivo...
It was
like,
the cast what got me.
The trailer is amazing, all of that. But I still didn't expect this.
Yeah.
And I also loved that he made... all of the characters three-dimensional.
Yes.
The only sort of cartoon cutout.
No, that's right.
Cardboard cutout.
Cartoon character. What? Who are we talking about?
Liam Neeson.
Oh, yeah. He was a cardboard cutout, but he was a caricature villain.
Yeah. But he's the only one. Yeah. Everybody else is well-rounded. You understand their motivations. You understand where they're coming from. That's the same thing as motivations.
Yeah. I've heard that word before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get all of that. And also, it's believable. So, Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I have never seen Michelle Rodriguez as anything other than the beautiful tomboy.
Yeah.
Like, in Fast and the Furious, she is Vin Diesel's woman.
Mm.
I mean, she has her own agency, blah, blah, blah. But she's Vin Diesel's woman. But she's also one of the boys.
Yeah, but she's the one who walks in slow motion and everybody goes like, oh my God, she can change her tire and her hair looks
exactly.
like that.
She is directed to be timid. She is meek. And I've never seen Michelle Rodriguez do that.
And she isn't an actress who you would say is known for acting.
No, and I was expecting her to be the weak link.
Yeah.
And actually...
Not at all.
No. And I don't think there is a weak link is the thing. Like, it's...
Everybody looks... I mean, I know there's lots of up-closes and we're now shooting in HD and everything, but everybody looks like they haven't slept
a couple of days. Yeah,
there is no polish.
The makeup is brilliant because they're not overly made up. Like, Viola Davis does smoky eyes. Like, I want to be Viola Davis when I'm a grown-up. If I ever get to be a grown-up, I hope I'm Viola Davis. But she does, like, smoky eyes. But other than that, it's not, like, face full of makeup. They all look... like ordinary people.
Yeah, and even her, she's wearing makeup, but some of that with her is she's that properly finished
yeah,
woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Which we'll talk about a bit later.
It fits with the character.
But she's, and her makeup falls to pieces. Did you notice that?
No.
That it started out, she had everything done.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the film, and she turns up at Alice's house and she's not got any makeup.
I did notice that.
But by the end of it, her eye, like, her mascara is not just, or her eyeliner is not just smudged, it's falling off.
Okay.
And her lips have gone and it needs doing again. And then right at the end
again, it's all back. I did notice that it was all back again
and
at
it's
the
just,
end.
But it's just such a clever thing
that
we shouldn't really talk about as much now because we are, that's something.
But it's part of the filmmaking thing.
Yeah. And
like
there's really...
the stuff we're going to talk about later, but this is part of the filmmaking thing. I just thought it was really, really clever.
It is. And I think what I've just realised, it isn't that I noticed it, it's that I've really appreciated it. For the first time in a really long while.
Yeah.
Probably since, weirdly, Ragnarok.
Okay.
That I thought, oh, people have done really, they've sat down and thought about this and done really clever things and gone to people, no, this is how I want it to be. And they've done exactly the same with this. I know that Steve McQueen was really, really keen to do this adaptation of a Linda LaPlante book because he saw it when he was a kid as a miniseries on British television, which anybody of mid-40s, would remember.
Yeah, like my mum, who is not in her mid-40s, was really excited about this.
Yeah.
But she also couldn't picture how it was going to translate into a film.
Yeah, because it was set in the East End and it had all these sort of really iconic East End women who are now even in...
East End, which we'll come back to. But like, But that's brilliant. Like, the way he's done that is brilliant. The way he's brought it to life is brilliant. The way he's transplanted it is brilliant. But also stuff like the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Is just like, there's a scene where Viola Davis is standing at the windows of her apartment. And it's like, you can see her reflection. And it's a Nina Simone track that plays. And it's like a punch to the gut. Like, yeah, just.
It is really teary.
It's heart-wrenching. And I just, again, like you, it's not so much that I noticed it as I just really appreciated those touches.
Yeah. I really like Stephen Finn. Every time I've seen him interviewed, he's really uncompromising, but he's not unpleasant ever with it. And he just always sort of, he always gets his point across, and he's always got a point.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there's no meandering with him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, believe me, I'm an expert on meandering. Yeah. So, you know, I'd notice it.
Yeah.
And he's obviously done that with this film. Yeah. He's gone, I loved this thing when I was a kid. I'm going to make it in a way that it relates 100% to now.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to wring everything out of everybody involved.
Yeah.
We're not going to go into any more acting. We're going to stop talking about that now.
Mm. If this film taught me anything, it taught me that skin darker than a paper bag can, in fact, sell a film.
Yes.
So that whole thing.
Explain.
I will. Thank you.
Please explain.
So there's a whole thing, particularly, I would say, in American films, where the leading lady isn't allowed to have skin darker than a paper bag. Particularly in mixed relationships.
Yeah.
Because it's not aesthetically pleasing, and black women aren't as attractive, and black women can't carry a film. And if this film taught me anything, it's that that's a load of shit. Because Viola Davis is amazing. And I knew she was going to be amazing because she's Viola Davis.
Yeah.
But that first scene with her and Liam Neeson in a mixed marriage.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to see him because he's so, so very pale. Pale.
Oh, it is pale. So, the contrast is up on it. They are on,
and they're on white sheets.
Yeah.
And she is really dark.
Yeah.
And they are kissing, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
And it is just this really wonderful visual that says more about mixed marriages, race relations, anything without ever saying anything than I've seen in a long time, and it was just wonderful that we're allowed to have that now.
Yeah.
And I have skin darker than a paper bag, and it's nice to see. I mean, I'm not saying I'm Viola Davis, let's not get it twisted here. But it's nice to see a representation of me and my people.
Yeah.
In a film like this, because that's not a thing.
And there was, I mean, that she wasn't the only dark-skinned person as well in it. It was, you know, all men.
Cynthia Erivo, they're all of the black people are black as well. They are not mixed. They are not lighter skinned black people. They are all dark skinned black people. And it's just lovely to see. Kind of secondary to that is also, I can't tell you how excited I was to see Viola Davis's natural hair in the trailer. And she pretty much has her natural hair all the way through the film.
Yeah, there's only one instance where she's got
a wig.
Yeah, she's got a shorter, straightened hair. And I think, like we were talking about before, we think that's more, or I thought that was more to do with just saying this is a different time. It's in a flashback.
Yeah.
And it'd just be the easiest way of going,
this is different.
This is some other time.
Because, again, I have been taught all my life that my natural hair is not acceptable.
Mm.
And that with my natural hair, I cannot be seen as a professional, and that my natural hair, I don't look put together.
Yeah.
And you cannot say that about her in this film.
No.
But Cynthia Erivo's got her natural hair as well. It's dyed blonde, but it's a very short blonde afro, teeny weeny afro.
Yeah.
And it's
very cute.
Just wonderful to see both of those things on the screen.
And like actually, we were saying about the people with the makeup, like everybody's makeup isn't over the top.
Yeah.
They haven't gone sharp, neat, everything's edged and neat and all that. It's really like, oh, actually, I just woke up and it's normal.
Yeah. No.
I mean,
it's not styled within an inch of its life.
Yeah, it's still not like, it's not film perfect.
No.
Nothing's film perfect in it.
No. And it's just, if this film taught me anything, it taught me how much I needed to see that.
Yeah.
And, like, I love Viola Davis in other things. I watch her in How to Get Away with Murder. And sometimes she has her natural hair, but it's often used when the character is falling apart.
Yeah.
And she takes her wig off. And the rest of the time she wears a wig. So it's just nice to see her all of the time with her natural hair.
Yeah, she's amazing as well. Like, her haircut is stunning.
Yes, it is.
Which... and, yeah, there's... Do you want to talk about the hairdressers now? Because I know I haven't got
it on the list. Oh, my God.
We are so organised. We make a list. And I've just remembered one point that was great that we haven't written down. I think Zina should talk about now.
So there are two scenes that take place in the hairdressers.
Yeah.
And like I said, I went to see this with my mum as well as Lorraine. And there were two things that happened in their hairdressers that my mum and I looked at each other and went, oh, hell no. Like, there is no fucking way. There is absolutely no fucking way. So, number one, Cynthia Erivo is braiding somebody's hair.
Yeah.
And something happens out the back and she lets go of the braid.
Yes.
And she's got, like, proper Florence Griffith Joyner. Like, yeah, she's nails. She's got talons as well. So where she's going with those braiding hair, I've got no idea. But she was braiding hair. She lets go of it to go and check on her friend. Fine. Mm. I mean, you wouldn't, but okay, fine. And then she just goes back and picks up right where she left off.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't. You'd have to undo it. And I was like, oh, yeah. No, wouldn't happen. Wouldn't happen. But the worst one, like the cardinal sin...
This is really funny.
Is there is a scene where the hairdresser is straightening somebody's hair, chemically straightening somebody's hair. Now, this woman has basically got, like, baby fuzz.
Yeah.
Like, she has already had her hair straightened too much. They have no business straightening what is left on her head. Absolutely none. And the woman is pressing it into her scalp as well. And anybody knows, you have to leave like a couple of millimetres because you will burn.
Yeah.
And she walks away. Yeah. She walks away and goes, has a conversation with Cynthia Erivo. That stuff is time sensitive. You're supposed to leave it on for like 8 minutes.
There's no evidence of any time.
No. Jesus. And my mum and I just looked at each other and were like, oh, no. There is no way.
It is really interesting that, you know, we've been making an effort for the whole natural hair blow. Then the thing that is the big... The biggest inaccuracy, other than maybe the, we've decided we're going to talk about later, but is like the hairdressers. Yes,
it was just bonkers. And my mum later on was like, well, maybe it wasn't relaxer. Maybe it wasn't chemical straightener. She doesn't speak like this. Maybe it wasn't.
At all.
Maybe they were just dyeing her hair. And I was like,
if it was dye, it was bleach.
If it was any sort of dye, that was bleach. Same.
Yeah.
No, you don't. And it just cracked me up in a film that was so careful in so many ways to have that stonking great error in the middle of it just made me laugh. Somebody needs to teach filmmakers about relaxer. Like, no. That's all. I'll climb down off my soapbox.
No, I'm glad we talked about that. I was reading that and I thought, oh, shall I talk about? No, we should do, because I think it's important. It's not that films have to be 100% accurate at all times.
No, but in a film that's work like this, that's working this hard to portray this many facets.
And it's worked, and it's one of the best of these. You know, it's done the best job.
That was just hilarious to me. Just me and my mum, both of us just sort of sitting and looking at each other like, what the? So, yeah.
If this film taught me anything... is that you should remain hench at all times.
Yes.
Just in case you have to do a heist.
Yeah.
Because, one, if you only have, say, a month to do a heist in, or 2 weeks, we're not 100% sure.
Because movie time.
Then you don't want your training to have to include you getting up to speed.
No.
To get in, like, match fit. Yeah. So you'd be doing your exercises, do some push-ups.
Today's arm day.
Arm day, mainly arm day.
Yeah.
Looking at Viola Davis.
And Cynthia Erivo.
There's even a scene with, I mean, they make a point that Cynthia Erivo's character is fit.
Yes.
She runs everywhere.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, she doesn't just run away. She's doing like
proper, like, running. Here I am. For the bus.
For the bus.
She's got form.
Yeah, she really does. And then she's in the scene where she's using a punch bag.
Yeah.
Like,
and her arms.
And she's just like actual cut muscles. But then all of them are super fit.
Yeah.
There isn't.
I don't remember, I mean, I know it about Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah.
But I don't remember having an, oh my God, moment about Michelle Rodriguez in the same way that I did about Cynthia Erivo and Viola Davis, his arms, where I was like,
yeah. And I think the last thing as well, the last thing we see Cynthia Erivo was in El Royale, where she's this really demure.
Twin set
and pearls singing, beautiful voice and all that. So that was a surprise.
Yeah.
Again. Acting, who knows?
We'll come back.
And Viola Davis is, she's very groomed and everything for the beginning of the film. Then, you know, takes her coat off and has got a vest on. You're like, oh, look at her.
Yeah.
And there is one minor training scene where they've got the lifting of however many boxes.
Let's come back to that in a sec, because if this film taught me anything, it taught me that all films have serious issues with movie time.
Yeah.
Their husbands die, and shortly after their husbands die, Jamal, played by Brian Tyree Henry, comes around to Viola Davis and is like, your husband stole from me. I don't know why he stole from me. I'm confused by why he stole from me. But you're going to need to give me back my $2 million.
Yeah.
Right? And you've got a month.
Yeah.
Then something else happens.
Linda, she says about, I only buried my husband 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And we're like, hang on, so...
And they've only got 2 weeks left of
and
the month.
Like, well,
what, did he turn up on the day?
And Viola Davis gives Michelle Rodriguez a really complicated job. I mean, to set up the heist that they have to... Yeah, the story is that they have to steal some money from someone else.
Jamal never says that. He's sell your belongings.
Jamal is
I'm nicely put together woman.
Yeah.
Sell your shit. And then Viola Davis is like, I haven't got anything.
Yeah.
So they have to carry out a heist.
And it's that she finds this notebook that has heist plans in it. So she decides, and this is where there is a tiny bit of weakness in the plot, that you just go from finding a book to... Like, oh, I'm just going to do one of the heists that's in the book.
Because Liam Neeson made comprehensive notes.
Yeah.
I understand that I am going backwards and forwards between character names and actor names, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, just
if you're
going to
stick with this podcast, that's going to be a feature, and we apologise.
IMDb it exactly like we have to occasionally.
So, Harry, Liam Neeson's character, has made comprehensive notes in this notebook, because he always does.
It's like the Grail Diary in Indiana Jones.
I don't care how comprehensive your notes are. If you have literally never planned a heist, been involved in a heist, never really acknowledged that that's what your husband does.
Yeah.
Like, she's very much, I'm going to look the other way. I am the teacher rep for this borough.
Oh, yeah, she's a union teacher.
Yeah, I know you do bad things, but it keeps me in the lifestyle to which I'm accustomed, and I'm going to look the other way. To go from that to, oh, I've got his notebook.
Yeah,
I understand everything now. I'm going to plan out
and
carry out a heist.
And he's not going to have written out instructions in a sort of, like, I'm teaching someone word,
no.
Is he? It's going to be, it's just where things are.
Yeah.
And they do go from, and actually it is, I was disappointed in the training montage. I thought
because,
there would be more.
Do you know why?
Because there basically isn't one.
You know why?
It's social.
Yeah,
why?
And there wasn't a really good rallying.
There wasn't a song.
That's why.
There wasn't a literal song.
Yeah, that's why.
There could have been.
There could have been. It would have been so easy to put in a training montage in here.
There should
And
be
then
more.
It would have shown the passage of time.
Yeah.
Because the movie time in this is insane.
It is mad.
Because also, so they have to train for the best case scenario for when they steal $5 million.
Yeah.
$5 million.
That's exactly how it's
got. With an A. For the best case scenario, if it's all $100 bills, and the worst case scenario, if it's all $1 bills. And they do that by filling up backpacks.
By filling Tupperware boxes with earth. Not just going to find a load of books.
No. Just filling Tupperware boxes.
Stacks of paper.
With earth. And running backwards and forwards. That's how they are going to train. In like 2 days. Like,
but as well, all...
And they all got, like, really buff, because we don't see their buffness, none of them, before that training starts.
So they're obviously just hench in the first place, which is why I'm saying if you're going to, you know, if just in case.
Just in case.
be hench, because Viola Davis may order you to run across the room with 84 pounds worth of earth in a backpack.
Yeah.
And she just sort of points at this stuff and goes, there's 44 pounds in that bag, run there and back.
Yeah.
It's like five metres and back. It's not representative of the distance they got to go. It's not up and down any stairs.
No.
What she should have said was, run downstairs with this, mm-hmm. try and get through a door with this massive backpack, mm-hmm. and can you do it 3 or 4 times? Because I want to time you, and you've got to do it in under 2 minutes.
And probably all that happened.
I don't know if it's in this film's timeline,
because there wasn't enough time for any of that. The movie time in this.
It is one of the insanest.
Mm. But also the movie time during the heist as well.
Yeah.
Like, how long was that heist? How long were they wrecking? When they went to the house to begin with, and Cynthia Erivo is just, like, running, I think in zigzags. Like, you can't see my hands, but imagine, like, I'm making great big
swirls.
They go
to check out the house that is in the heist, which is a big twist on its own, who uh-huh. the house is.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know. I mean, we don't do no spoilers.
No, we can't.
But we can't do it. But so really, if you haven't seen this film, go away now, because it's massive.
Yeah.
And it's Colin Farrell's house that they're going to go nick the money back from Brian Tyree Henry, and it's a complicated sort of that he's trying to get out of crime, and there's a lot of setting up, but there's not enough setting up for the robbery.
No, there isn't.
They do not. I would like to make this clear, I have never done a robbery or a heist.
I was going to one time.
Did you go down that path?
I thought about it.
Yeah.
But the planning is really complicated.
And
it was too much like hard work.
I'm sure it would be. Yeah. I personally have never done that. But from what I know from other films, reading books, and things about real life, you got to plan this shit.
For a long time.
And time stuff. You know, how long is it going to take you to get in and out of that house? Your mate don't just wander around the outside. They said Cynthia Erivo goes running she's a pretend jogger.
Yeah.
The worst hider in the world as well. She just hides, like, down
by crouching.
It's not even dark. It's like, by crouching. You can see that you're there.
At one point, isn't she, like, on top of a shed looking over a fence?
Yeah, she looks at this. She looks in the
fully
back of
in
the
view.
House. Yeah, and she's just crouching down with, like, a cap pulled down over her eyes. Like, no, love, we can see you. The security guard, I'm sure...
It's like when kids hide their eyes and they're like, you can't see, I can't see you, you can't see
she
me.
She does a ducking thing where she goes, oh, security guard's like, no, you've just ducked your head.
We
can see you fully. But there is, there's very little actual planning.
Yeah.
Considering what they're going
to
do.
Yeah. For a film that's this well thought through, and it really is well thought through, we're going to come back to, like, how good...
It is. Yeah, we've just talked about how good a film it like,
yeah, and there are other ways in which we, like, properly love this film, but, like, the weakest elements of it are the actual heist.
Which it would be if it was amateurs doing it. It would be weak.
But it's so brilliant in other ways. Yeah. Like, the way that they've thought through the fact that they...
I would have liked to have seen them going shopping for their masks. There was no argument about, I can't wear this mask.
But the way she got the guns, though, that was brilliant.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. But also, the fact that they've clearly... Jatem, Jamal's brother, is watching them. And he's watching them the whole time.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of like, oh.
It is properly stomach-churning stressful at times.
And he gets, like, they come out with the money and he nicks the van.
Yeah.
But they thought that through and they crash into him and he dies and they steal their money back. And
but there is no inkling that they've clocked him at all.
And that's what I mean. So for the heist to be this shoddy,
when
clearly there are other things that are like, well, if this, then this, and if this, then this, and then it doesn't make any sense.
Maybe all four of them are actual heist geniuses.
Yeah.
And they just happened to find each other. They didn't know they were heist geniuses until they started.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden they just took to it.
Yeah.
Like, we're really fucking good at this.
Yeah.
Let's do this again.
Yeah.
Except for the shoddiness of checking the house, who's in the house. There was no...
No.
Oh.
Yeah. And
I mean, it doesn't let it down at all.
No. And I can let it go because so much else is brilliant.
Yeah. And so much of the actual heist is very good. There is something so really clever gone on with that because you don't notice.
No, it. And it's only then when you start pulling it apart for something like this that you're like,
They call them, it's the refrigerator moment thing, isn't it? It's when you go to the fridge after you watch the film and just stand there with the light on going, oh, shit,
Yeah.
And that is...
It's quite badly done.
Yeah.
But something that's not badly done.
Yes.
As if this film taught me anything, it's that you can do social commentary without stamping social commentary all over the wrapping.
Yeah.
So I went to see The Hate U Give quite recently, and I loved it. And I think we need films like The Hate U Give. However, the fact that it is so clearly about race relations in the United States means loads of people won't go and see it, won't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
Because... they don't want to. They don't want to engage with it. It's not, yeah, it's not for me. It's not about me. It's got nothing to do with me. I know people who don't normally go to cinemas who aren't that interested in film who are like, that Widows looks really good. I want to go and see it. And without even realising it, they're going to be thinking about Black Lives Matter. They're going to be thinking about poverty. They're going to be thinking about single parent families. They're going to be thinking about mixed marriages. They're going to be thinking about corrupt politicians. They're going to be thinking about so many things that are just in it.
Yeah, and it's, which is, you know, funnily enough, that's just how life is.
Yeah.
And this is what we've been, and we're trying to think of a term that is post something, that this is, this should just be in things. We are all at a slightly different level of social education.
Yeah.
Where I think most people, even the most head in the sand buried person, it's going to be aware of stuff, even if they don't agree with it.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, they ain't going to go and see The Hate U Give or Black Klansman.
No.
But they're going to go and see a heist film with Liam Neeson in, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Taken. He's going to say something about killing someone and get, like, pounded with just all this
Everything.
Stuff. And it's totally, it's so part of it. It's just... oh, a lot like life.
Yeah.
You know, really weirdly like life.
So, Liam Neeson and Viola Davis's son dies in this.
Yeah.
And you learn quite early on that he's died.
Yeah.
And Viola Davis turns around to Liam Neeson and is like, you killed him, you caused him to be dead, blah, 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 blah. And I just thought, Liam Neeson's a crook. He's done some sort of crook stuff. And
some
either...
people would call it crime. But carry on.
He's done some sort of criminal shenanigans.
Just good.
And either his son has somehow got involved or his son has... something's happened to his son because of his criminal activities.
Yeah.
Is what I assumed.
I thought he was a soldier.
Yeah.
Because he was putting on white gloves. Like, Viola Davis... he wasn't. Viola Davis is putting gloves on him while he's in the coffin.
Yeah.
And you sort of see his age is about 18.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, soldier.
Right. So we've also, without even it being talked about, without it being a thing, we've got a black woman, a white man, and their dual heritage son.
Yeah.
Who, to all intents and purposes, is a black man.
Yeah.
And he's driving a car. There's a flashback scene, and he's driving his car. And as soon as he was driving what was very clearly a quite high-end fancy sports car, I was like, oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And he gets pulled over. But the reason he gets pulled over is because he does a U-turn because he's on the phone to his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad's left something in the car and he has to take it back to his dad.
And he's doing that stupid American thing of the, we never look at the road when we drive.
Yeah. And then he puts the phone down because he gets pulled over. But then Liam Neeson is like calling him and calling him. So he leans over to pick up the phone and he gets shot.
Yeah.
So without saying anything, without doing anything, without being like, oh my God, Black Lives Matter. And that's it. Like, we never go back to it. We never revisit it. It's not like, did this cop, blah, 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 blah. None of that. It's just a scene in the film.
Yeah. And it was really, even the run up to it is really cleverly played because I was talking about how it didn't occur to me until I saw him in the car that he was a black man.
Yeah.
When I see him in the coffin, especially with the gloves, I thought, he literally could have been a buzz-cutted Marine.
Yeah.
That was in my head. It was that.
Yeah.
And it was just so... it's like, oh, you meant me to think that.
Yeah.
Damn it. You filmed me.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And I just thought it was brilliant. I love the fact that we get Cynthia Erivo. Again, it's no... there's no time spent. There's no time wasted
no.
in this film. So which is why the movie time makes no sense, I think.
Yeah, so, no, that part of it is so weird.
Yeah, but like, so Cynthia Erivo is working in the hairdressers, in the terrible, terrible hairdressers.
Yeah, being a terrible hairdresser.
And then she gets home, her mum's looking after her daughter. She gets a phone call and she's straight back out the door. She has to run for the bus and she has to go and babysit because she babysits at night. So you know everything you need to know about how close to the breadline she's living,
yeah.
How poor she is, how hard she's working to make ends meet.
Yeah, there's no sort of horrible scene with someone being dragged out of something. You know, they normally do all that by a terrible, something terrible happening. Someone's on drugs or...
Yeah.
And they just don't do that.
No. And it's just, it's all the better for it.
Yeah.
It's all the better for, it's a really good story. It's a really well-crafted story. And also underneath the story, there is all this social commentary because we need it right now in the world. Also, this is what's going on in the world.
And if you've got 3D, well-rounded characters, that's just what happens by default.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you are going to make characters that people want to, that are going to engage with, whether you like them or not, and going to be like, you know, going to believe, you've got to give them a life that everybody's living.
Yeah.
But, oh, and guess what? When it does it, it works. And, you know, you get a good film out of it.
And I loved it. I loved that that was in there, but not overplayed.
Because they even did it with, not even, but with Alice, the John Bernthal's wife. He always plays a shitbag.
He's always terrible. Always.
I feel terrible for him because it's probably just because he's got a bit of a photo fit face.
Right,
but he always plays a shitbag and he plays an awful character. And that you find he is just the worst in one scene that's probably less than 2 minutes long. And that poor
girl,
keeping
a motorbike in the bedroom.
He keeps a motorbike in the bedroom.
That says everything I need to know.
Like, you dick.
Yeah.
And then he sort of, he slaps Alice, or punches her in the face, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, he slaps her because she turns away from him because he's already punched her and he wants to see the black eye he's given her. I was like, it's just mad.
Yeah.
But she is just, like, her whole life is just being, you find out her mother was abusive as well, and her whole life has just been on that level.
Yeah.
So she falls into escorting because that's all she's good for. And even her mother gives her an advert for escorting. And she's the best for me. She's the best arc.
Okay.
Because she did the whole thing of, you know, that was where she started from.
Yeah.
And then she came up and actually ended up being the one that Viola Davis went and saw when she couldn't cope.
Yeah, yeah.
And she pulled it together.
Yeah.
And was doing, you know, was keeping Viola Davis strong.
Yeah.
So, like, sort of through her own, I suppose through her own experiences, she's gone like, yeah, I can do this because I've done this. And she goes and gets the gun.
Yeah. And then she also solves the Michelle Rodriguez task. Yeah. She's like,
And she actually does. She does most of the work.
Yeah.
Really quietly.
Yeah.
But just really cleverly as well. Yeah, if this film taught me anything is that I am still on my ongoing learning about acting journey. Because, I mean, Colin Farrell was the one in it. Everybody acts in it really well.
Yes.
And I understand that a director directs people.
Yes.
And then they act.
Yes.
Michelle Rodriguez. She acts in it properly.
Yeah.
But Colin Farrell, who has never been bad, you know, I can't sort of say, I mean, I love him, so I'm really, really biased.
Okay.
But I can't think of anything he's been in where you go, oh, that was a stinker. You can't act your way out of a paper bag.
No. No.
So he's known for being quite good.
Yeah.
But in this, he is astonishing in bits of it. There's a particular exchange with him and his dad, who's played by Robert Duvall, who's obviously a big heavyweight actor, who's, you know, veteran and all of that. And they have this horrible argument that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's all really, it's just done with, you don't see them together, do you? It's just a shot of each of them. And it's quite close up. It's not super close up, but they're all twitchy face and spits flying. And and there's one bit you sort of, you get from not very many words, but you get that Colin Farrell's character is trapped.
Yes.
And yes, he's taken bribes. And
but he's trying to be a good guy.
But he doesn't want to do what he's doing. No. And he says to his dad, you know, we'll all be better off when you lot are dead.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you are speaking for millennial generation of people. you're speaking for Trump supporters versus mm-hmm. other and vice versa.
Yeah.
And personally on a sort of, I would be better if you were dead. But then, but he does it and his face is so twitchy and hateful. It's just brilliant. So he is now my favourite person, my favourite acting person at the minute. I think you can call them actors as well.
I think you can call them actors, yeah. My favourite acting person or slash actors.
Yeah.
Actor, singular. Is Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because he is, again, properly acting. And I say this because we have seen a run of things recently where we've both just sort of come out and gone, huh, that person is always playing themselves.
Yeah.
So we saw A Simple Favour. Anna Kendrick is always playing Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
We saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, actually.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd is always playing Paul Rudd. Like, yeah. I feel like there have been a few things recently where we're like,
And then you had Chris Hemsworth doing Thor and El Royale. And it's like, oh, actually, you can also do Bad.
And that's Daniel Kaluuya in this. So I loved him in Black Mirror.
Yeah.
I loved him in Get Out. I love him in Black Panther.
Yeah.
Fucking hated him in this. But I didn't. And what I'm learning is that I don't hate Daniel Kaluuya, but he's a really good actor and he played Je T'aime brilliantly.
He was one of the most intimidating characters.
Oh my God.
I've seen in films.
I wish you could see my body language now. Like, I am literally recoiling, remembering.
I've just remembered the really awful scene. He plays, like, there's one scene in a bowling alley that's basically.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah.
And
he does, and there's no point. I was not watching Daniel Kaluuya anymore. Like, wasn't. He was so good, and
he's
like
so
his physicality is different.
Yeah, he's taller in this film.
Yeah, he's broader. Like, he's again, hench.
He's henched up. Yeah, he's definitely henched up is a phrase. I don't know anything about this.
His face, he's holding his face differently.
Yeah,
it was unreal.
And he has played a lot of really, like, he's only played likable people, really, or so far that I've seen him. I've not seen him in anything where he's a baddie.
No, I haven't. Well, he's sort of a baddie in Black Panther.
He's just on the wrong side.
Yeah, but no, not out and out baddie.
No.
And when I heard that he was going to be in a baddie in this, I was like, oh,
yeah,
really?
I don't know, you're too much of a puppy dog, aren't you?
But then
too
even
lovely.
In the trailer, there's just something he does. In the trailer.
It's the wave at the graveside, isn't it?
And it's like, I was like, oh, no, he's got this. But afterwards, when I was talking to you about it, and I was like, and he's Posh Kenneth from Skins.
Yeah.
And you were like, no, he's not.
I could not believe it was. I mean, I loved Skins.
I loved Skins.
I've seen it even a couple of times.
Yeah.
The
first generation of Skins I've watched more than once.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean the first. I mean, I've seen all of them.
Yeah, but I've watched the first generation more than once.
And I could not. I mean, apart from I thought the timing was well out and he'd been about 11.
Yeah.
But
he is Posh Kenneth in Skins. Yeah. I just thought he was Posh Kenneth. And then he was in Black Mirror and it was like, oh. No. And then this is so far removed again that I was blown away. So for me, he is my favourite acting person.
The one person that I did want to go and see this for was Brian Tyree Henry because of my, I think I've said it about 50 times just on the podcast that I love Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
But he is, I mean, name to watch, you know, he's going to be in things.
Yeah.
And he's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And he went from being the alderman, like a prospective, and he's genuinely worried about the campaign and all of that.
Because he wants to get out of his life of crime.
Yeah,
and
he wants to get out to threatening Viola Davis's dog. And you're like, oh my God, that was terrifying.
That was awful, awful, awful.
And I will forever love Steve McQueen for him making a point of for the animal lovers, because he's not silly, he knows what people care about.
Yeah.
There's a scene in it where Viola Davis takes her dog to a dog sitter, to her kennels.
Yes.
So that we can all breathe.
I thought that. I was like,
she's
love
got a dog.
That.
Brian Doherty, he knows she's got a dog. He's already threatened the dog. That dog's going to end up on a fucking stake somewhere. It's going to be nailed to a door.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen. And he just goes, no, it's all right, mate.
Yeah.
I've got you. It's in the kennels.
Yeah.
We don't want to worry about that anymore.
I love that. But also, so I don't know Cynthia Erivo very much. She was a revelation for me when I saw El Royale.
Yeah, and
I have since done a fair amount of Instagram and internet stalking.
I have stalked her roundly.
Really, like, she is amazing.
She was staged before
yes.
the film.
Yeah, yeah. She stands up to, her character stands up to Viola Davis.
Yeah.
And there's a height discrepancy.
Yeah.
And she's been brought in late in the game. She's not a widow.
Yeah.
She's just Michelle Rodriguez's babysitter.
Yeah.
But she can drive. She stares down Viola Davis.
Yeah. Well, what we haven't said, actually, is that, Veronica, Viola Davis' character, is horrendous.
Horrendous. And if this film taught me anything, it's that you can still root for characters that you don't like. Because I did not particularly like her. Like, I felt for her.
Yeah.
I wanted her to be successful. We even cheered and were shouting at the screen, all three of us, shouting at the screen in the final scene of this film.
Yeah.
Definitely. However, didn't like her.
No, and she's, some of it is, and you see it crumble. You see her facade go completely.
Yeah.
It's another one of the social point thing, that she's a different class than these women. You know, than the rest of these women.
But also she's being the strong black woman.
Yeah, and she's being the strong black woman, and she's like, she's putting on an intimidating front to get these other widows together. And there's only one sentence where basically she didn't need to involve them at all, but she did in a really bastardy way.
Yeah.
And it's just completely out of order.
But Cynthia Erivo comes and just sees straight through it all.
Yeah.
And they have a stare down. And you're watching it going, don't do that.
Who's going to slap?
And she wins.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing to see her also be a powerhouse and to have a film where it's not just one powerhouse. Like, there isn't a weak
and she's performance a genuine powerhouse where obviously Viola Davis isn't genuine.
No.
And it's like, actually, all of these other women have got more strength and are more powerful than you, really. You just had something on them.
Yeah.
Which was literally just handed over their names to a gangster.
Yeah. Which then, actually, they're supported by something that you learn.
If this film taught me anything, it is that I'm going to start with the one item of clothing that started me off on this thought process, but Viola Davis wears, she's got the most beautiful outfits.
Mm-hmm.
And if this film taught me anything, it's that I want a navy blue satin raincoat that matches the clothes I've got on under it. Like, she's wearing this, it's trousers and a blouse.
Yeah.
And it's the most beautiful midnight blue, and it is stunning. And we sort of looked at each other and just went like, oh my God, that coat.
Yeah. But
her whole wardrobe is just so beautiful. But everybody is wearing exactly the right costume.
Yeah.
Without it being
a costume.
A costume. Without it being really obvious. And you could just stand any of these characters in their outfits in front of you, and you've got their whole story.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen something where it was so
clear.
So clear, but not obvious. Not like actually played out like a sledgehammer.
The one that did that for me, so obviously that coat was beautiful, but it didn't make me learn it in the same way. The thing in this film that made me learn that same lesson was Jatem, Daniel Kaluuya's leather shirt.
Yeah, and it's a really specific...
It's a really weird leather shirt, and it's only done up at the neck. The only button that's done up is the button at the neck. And the button only being done up at the neck, I mean, it being a leather shirt, but he wears other shirts and also only does them up at the neck.
Yeah.
And that, for me, was the signal of, like... That's what I mean. But it's a very specific.
Yeah.
And it's a very specific choice.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like what you've done there.
Yeah.
See what you've done there. Like what you've done there.
It's like, he's like a, he's almost Darth Vader-y. There's something really villainy.
Yeah.
It is classic. It is really classic villain signalling clothes, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's armour.
Yeah.
But, oh God, he's terrifying, actually. More I think about it, that's even made me go cold a couple of times talking about
this. Yeah. And if this film taught me another thing, it's that I also love a good cameo.
Oh, yes. Please tell everybody about this cameo.
So, this film is a remake of a 1980s ITV drama.
Yes.
Right. Based on a Linda LaPlante book.
Yeah.
there is a funeral scene and it's Alice's husband's funeral. And I looked at the screen and went, what's Cora and EastEnders doing at the funeral?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, my mum looked and literally leant, because I was sitting in the middle, and my mum literally leant past me and went, Lorraine, it's the original widow. And it was nothing. Like, it was just, yeah, that's I all she never.
And I'm so upset. I'm going to go and see it again just so I can see it, because I missed it.
She was never in it again.
No.
She didn't reappear, and I was kind of waiting for her to reappear because I was too young to watch the original widow, so I didn't realise that that's who she was. So I was really confused by her being in it, but I love that she was just part of the congregation at the funeral. Like, here's a nice Easter egg for those of you who know what we're doing. There you go. Done. Keep it moving.
And she is a particularly... I don't want to be horrible about her.
She's a very striking looking lady.
She's a distinctive woman, and she's not unattractive at all. And she's also got that face, that sort of face that EastEnders do very well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a particular sort of London face.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, we would know what we mean. Yeah. You lot, actually, if you come from, like, you'll know what we mean.
Yeah.
But she's got
I'm going to say fishwife.
Hatchet.
Yeah.
I'm kind of there. I'm not saying it in a sort of, this is everybody else and not
no,
me.
No, purely descriptive. No judgment, just descriptions. Yeah, no judgment.
And it's not unattractive.
No,
well.
No,
it's
not at all.
Really,
you wouldn't miss her.
No.
Is the thing. I don't know how you did. Because you were distracted by...
I was distracted by the mum's hair.
Right.
Because her, Alice's mum's hair is... It wasn't just boofy side to side. It's brushed from the forehead back.
Up. And round.
And it's so...
It almost looks as though she could slot her head forward and the hair would just stay.
She'll just take her hair off like a weird helmet. Yeah. It's amazing. But again, that is a real specific choice.
Mm.
And everything even her mum is wearing is like, oh, that is all fake gold. It's just terrible.
So, if this film taught me anything, it taught me that we need a wider range of, I'm going to go genres, of reviewers. And genres is not the right word. At all.
Flavours.
Types.
Yeah, species.
Probably not species.
No, because that's not. I don't mean that even. Oh, God.
But, so, I was trying to do some research because I was trying to make
apparently
it sound...
Apparently we do research now.
Yeah, and trying to make it sound like I know what I'm talking about.
can always try.
And I made the fatal error of looking at other people's reviews. Now, I like a review, but what has been interesting about this film is that it's generally quite well reviewed.
Yeah.
But where it's not well reviewed, it's very much old white guys.
Yeah.
Who can't see what the rest of us are seeing is the only way to describe what's going on.
And
like
it's weird because, I mean, not all old white guy.
No.
But one of my favourite reviewers, and I don't agree with him more than half the time, actually, is Mark Comeau. Because I always just think he's quite even-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved it. He gave it 5 stars.
Right.
And he says that it's an empowering film. And he gets it. But so if he... what is he, like, late 50s, early 60s? Mm-hmm. If he can get it, the rest of you should fucking be able to.
Yeah.
It's not going to take much of a stretch of imagination.
Yeah. And I noticed it in the reviews that I was reading.
Yeah.
But also then I came across this article where Steve McQueen is being interviewed. And he actually said, through the critique of this movie, I've seen sexism in a way and racism in a way, which is interesting, even if it's a positive review. People don't even notice that, but when you've got 90% of the critics are white males, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And I just, that's what I was reading in reviews, was kind of issues with Viola Davis being too strong and too cold and too calculating.
Oh.
And issues with there not being any heart in the movie.
Yeah, see, which
and
is...
issues
what
with...
What was it you went... Was it was cold or something?
Yeah.
That it... It's like, what were you watching?
Yeah.
One thing it was not.
And issues with kind of aggression and just...
Yeah.
It was just very subtle racial bias, very subtle misogyny. Like, it was just really interesting to read the ways in which we're not allowed to behave.
Yeah.
and the things that we're not allowed to do.
And like we've said, that this is, these are some of the most human characters seen in a long time.
Yeah. So I just, like, I don't have much of a learning point, except we need a broader range of reviewers. We need more reviewers of colour. We need more female reviewers. We need more lady reviewers.
Yeah, I can't believe I kept away from reviews. I generally keep away from reviews lately because I don't want to pick up anybody else's opinion.
Fair enough.
But I was surprised because the ones I had seen were all overwhelmingly sort of positive. Yeah. So I was just really shocked anybody could get anything from it.
Yeah, weird.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I could, if this isn't, it's not an if this film taught me anything.
Okay.
But it's what this film did to me.
Okay.
That I haven't thought about an ending of a film so hard or so long for her.
You're right.
Yeah. For probably since something horrible like Mother or Martyrs. But I just keep thinking about it. I want to know, did Alice say, because it ends with Veronica, Viola Davis, just talk like she sees Alice by accident after the heist has been over a while and sort of says hello to her in the street. And you don't find out she's in the car with a friend. She's meeting a friend. Okay. She's not driving.
Okay.
Because you don't see her. That's just it.
No, true.
She leaves the restaurant, and you don't actually watch Alice leave the restaurant. You watch Viola Davis, and then you see her talking, and you don't see Alice's reaction at all. And it's just, I really want to know what happened.
Yeah.
As what really and has upset me a little bit is the point that they all went off their separate ways.
Yeah.
And that you can do that thing, great big thing together. It didn't bond them.
Mm.
They didn't have any big, and now we're going to be friends for life or anything. That's really upsetting. I just want to know that everybody's all right, and you find out everybody's okay, you know, more than okay. It works out well for them, you know, like, you know, don't get me wrong, but it's just, I want to know more about it. And the ending for Colin Farrell is just, it's really sad. He gets to be, like, he gets elected, and you know,
it's not what
he wants. So that's the worst punishment he could have had.
Yeah.
So the ending for me, with Colin Farrell getting his comeuppance in a really double-edged sword.
But I loved that it wasn't happy families. Yay, we're all sitting around drinking tea.
Beryl. I did.
Fucking Beryl. I know. Writing films
with
again.
Fondant fancies.
Yeah. I like that. I like the fact that they weren't all together, that they were all like, we did this, we did what we needed to do, and now we're going our separate
ways. Love it. I love it that it wasn't.
And I
love
that Cynthia Erivo, I love that Cynthia Erivo drives off with her kids.
Yeah.
And she's good. I love that Michelle Rodriguez gets her quinceañera dress.
Shot back.
Wow.
It was really sad.
Wow. That dress, that shot was horrid. But yeah, I love that she gets it back. Alice is clearly fine. Viola Davis has got a full face back on, so she's clearly fine.
She's all.
But they're not friends.
No. And it's.
And I like that. Like, that's realistic.
I love it because it is realistic.
But I do wish, like you, I wish we'd seen a response.
And that they.
Because she just stops. Like, it. You see her going to get in a car.
Yeah.
You hear Viola Davis speak to her. She turns, but then it's Viola Davis.
Oh, do you never. Does it go that
I'm
far?
Sure it. I'm sure she turns and looks at Viola Davis. And then Viola Davis speaks, but then it never goes back, so you never know
and
whether she's listening.
When she says how, she says, like, how have you been?
She's so hopeful.
And and she obviously really, really wants to talk to her because she's got no friends.
Yeah.
They do make it subtle, but they make a point that she's got no mates, she's got no real family, there's nothing for her.
Yeah.
And Alice is the only one that she really connected with.
Yeah.
And it's her face is heartbreaking, actually. It's really sad. And I really want her to be okay.
Yeah.
If this film taught me anything, is that I would say, not that we've got old and soft. Maybe it is that we've got old and soft, senior. But we are definitely reacting harder to the films lately. And I don't know if it's just that where we spend 2/3 of our life in a cinema.
So all of our waking hours.
Almost all of our waking hours.
Yeah.
Bar the 2 or 3 that we go to work.
Right.
we spend in the cinema. Yeah. Or we're just so comfortable now that it's like our living rooms. Or we've just got so old as soft.
I don't think it's either of those things. Because my mum doesn't spend all her time in cinemas. And my mum would punch us both in the taco if we had described her as old and soft. I think we were just really invested in this film.
Very.
And the last time the same thing happened to us, I think, was El Royale. And we were, again, really invested
arms
in the
waving,
film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a point in this where the three of us...
I did in Hereditary as well.
Like, oh, did you?
Oh, it was so nice. I was on my own watching Hereditary and the noise.
Okay. So there was a point in this, like, there was us, like, cheering. There were fists of, like, yes, a fist of triumph at various points. And there is one key scene where, so it turns out Harry's not dead.
Yeah.
And it turns out that he's been knocking off one of the other widows and they've got a baby together. And I'm assuming that's Harry's baby.
Yeah, I think it starts out where at the beginning. It could be either of them, actually. Yeah. She's still married. It's not like...
But I think it's Harry's baby.
Yeah, I think that's what they...
Sort of... And he did the whole thing to stage his, like, to help out Colin Farrell's character.
Yeah.
But also to stage his death.
Yeah.
So that he could run off into the sunset with this new woman and this new family, because Veronica blames him for the death of their son.
Yeah.
He can never get it back. They can never be who they were. So he's just leaving.
Yeah.
And he's a shitbag.
Yeah, he's extra
shitty. He knows that the alderman's going to come after her and he does not care.
No.
He tells her as much and then he goes to shoot her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she made it messy.
Yeah, but oh my God, we missed the massive thing talking about mixed families and stuff like that. She turns round
And says to him, like, so your new white...
Yeah, Viola Davis spits at him.
Yeah.
Like, and it is, she's just found out, or she's found out a little while before that he's still alive. And they've just done the heist, so stress is running. Yeah. He's come to kill her, basically. And she
and make off with the money.
And make off with the money.
He knows, because it basically suggests that he's engineered this whole thing. She'll carry out the heist, he'll kill her, and then he'll make off with the $5 million.
What she was supposed to do was sell the number.
Yes, actually, yeah.
I could see myself doing something like that. And there's a really obvious thing you could do, or this really complicated, stupid thing.
Yeah.
I would not always take the easy one. Yeah. I'm definitely going to. But she sort of spits at him about, you know, now you've got your perfect white family.
Yeah.
And it's like, he does sort of react a bit slap to it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But it is a proper little, it's a stab, and it's a real slap. And we sort of all went,
yeah.
And there was a lot of gasping.
Yeah, there was a lot of gasping, there was a lot of shouting. And in that, all three of us were like, shoot him, kill him, get him, don't you dare. Like, oh, the fuck.
You're not taking it back.
We were making so much noise and nobody shushed us. But I can only imagine that the whole cinema was doing
it. I heard
it.
Everybody was
were
doing
they?
It.
Okay.
And when when she visits the widow who doesn't do the heist, who Harry's knocking off, and you realise he's in her house.
Yes, because the dog is scratching at the door.
The dog knows his...
Yeah.
Dog was very clever.
Very clever dog.
But there was a woman along, sort of on the opposite to the aisle to us, who just went, oh. I'm glad it's not just me.
Yeah. So I don't think it's that we're getting old and soft. I think it's that we were fully immersed in this film. Yeah.
And when
because my mum doesn't do that. I mean, my mum doesn't always stay awake.
I don't know, because I've sat next to mum a couple of times in films, and she does. She does. Yeah, she also doesn't always stay awake, but she also does. Or she just sort of tells me stuff in the middle of the page.
But yeah, all three of us literally like, kill him, shoot him,
and
get him. Yes!
The worst... And I had a proper, like, a proper screamy moment with Daniel Kaluuya in the bowling alley.
Yeah.
Which is one of the worst film scenes I've ever
seen.
Yeah,
and all three of us were like,
terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you see, again, spoilers, he tips a disabled man out of his wheelchair and then proceeds to stab him repeatedly.
In the paralysed parts of his body, where he's like, oh, you can't feel that.
Yeah.
Can't feel that, but you felt that.
He's so cold.
Awful.
So cold.
Awful.
Like,
And what I think, going back to what you were saying about endings.
Yeah.
We didn't move. My mum gets really annoyed that Lorraine and I like watching the credits.
Yeah.
And she'll often leave and be like, we'll wait. Yeah, I'll wait for you outside.
You've got and to watch she... the credits. Those people made the film.
Yeah. But she sat with us and we just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked.
Yeah, she never sits
because we just, we had so much to say, like, straight away. So much, like, so, yeah, I don't know that I'd call it getting an old and soft so much as...
There was just, I think...
There was just a lot to say.
I mean, I've had a very noisy week.
Right.
I told you about Hill House and scaring Paul to death.
Yeah.
But, I've had a very shouty week with films and TV, but this was the most I've been shouty. Okay. All the way through from, you know, everything that happened was like, oh no, all of that Gladys.
Okay, so, Jacqueline Mary.
Yeah.
Jamal.
Yeah.
Shatem.
Mm.
Harry.
Oh, that's very good.
Thank you.
Very attractive men.
Mm.
So that's not a problem with any three of those.
No. And please note, I said the character names.
Yeah. Yeah. I would shag Jatem.
Okay.
Because I don't think I would want to spend a lot of time around him. Fair although enough. Very attractive. And there would definitely be a thing like, you know, you would wanna,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Yeah.
With the shirt on, you know, with the leather. And but you wouldn't want to spend a lot of time with him because you know there's something not right about him. Fling Harry.
Okay.
Because it's obvious he likes a good fling.
Right.
And I think, you know, you can see it on him, can't you?
Okay.
Marry Jamal.
Okay.
Because he was trying to do the alderman thing.
Okay.
So obviously he wants a better job than what he's got.
Right.
So ambitious.
Okay.
And probably going to make something of himself.
Okay.
If not, I'd say senator.
Okay.
You know, this time he didn't win. Next time he might, if he doesn't go back to a life of terrible crime, which I don't think he would.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was a good one. And that was,
thanks.
It didn't have to make any terrible decisions.
Right. If this film taught me anything, it taught me that I love a beginning that gives me whiplash. I love seeing skin darker than a paper bag on screen. I still have a major issue with movie time, and I love when social commentary isn't in your face and it's just there.
And if this film taught me anything, it's that I learned how to make a film,
right?
And about cinematography and all of these things.
Okay.
I learned about being hench at all times, uh-huh. just in case there's a heist.
Yep.
I've learned a lot about acting. And if this film taught me anything, is that I love an ending that will stay with you for weeks.
Okay. So this has been If This Film Taught Us Anything.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. And go and see Widows if you haven't already. You shouldn't be listening this far.
It's amazing.
Bye.
Bye.
If This Film Taught Us Anything was produced by Xenia.
Our theme music is Epic Song by Boxcat.